Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in to Let's Talk Urban with host Felicia Bradshaw
at Urban Grapevine Magazine Project,
your number one source for the hottest author in urban fiction talk. Get put on. Book it at let's.talk.urban1@gmail.com. Boom.
Good evening. This is your host, Felicia Bradshaw of Let's Talk Urban. Tonight, our special guest will be Clever Black. He was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, in 1973. He and his immediate family left New Orleans on August 28, 2005, to escape Hurricane Katrina, and they've never returned to the city except for an occasional visit. Clever Black and his family now call Charlotte, North Carolina, their home. Says Clever Black, "The Ninth Ward for me was a place of happiness, sorrow, despair, hopelessness, love, success, and tragedy. I've learned so much in just that small piece of real estate. I learned to deal with life's problems head on. I learned to love and care for others. I've witnessed so many of my friends and peers perish on the streets that the most powerful lesson I've learned was not to succumb to the attitude that it won't happen to me. I have a deep appreciation for life through writing. I release a lot of my pinned-up emotions that have been with me since my teen years. I look at all that's going on in the world, and I feel sorry for all the people I knew personally that were murdered on the streets of New Orleans. I wondered what they would have become. I, too, was a child of the streets, but I, by the grace of God, survived those dramatic and confusing times. I grew wiser over the years, and now I have goals and dreams that are getting ever closer and more attainable. Unlike in the past, I now have hope." Clever Black's books, LLC, is the home of the Holland series. His most powerful, I would say, his most powerful form of writing, it is a goal. Its goal is to deliver a thought-proving read to all who are interested in this epic family saga that exposes and expresses many of life's experiences, the American experience. The Holland Family Saga is America at its best and at its worst. It is a sweeping and epic family saga filled with drama, violence, deep dialogue, and deadly alliances. And that's just scraping the surface. The first book was published in the saga titled The Holland Family Saga Part 1, They Don't Mind Dying, was released in March of 2012 and is enjoying minimal success. Seven subsequent novels in the series soon followed. The latest release in the ongoing epic saga titled Definition of a Boss was released in July of 2014. And a full-length standalone novel titled Implicit, whose explosive ending is continuously leaving readers with their mouths wide open over the shocking conclusion, which was released in February 2014. In less than 2 years, author Clever Black has released 9 full novels under his own publishing company, Clever Black Books, LLC. And in February 2014, he signed with Wright House Publishing and launched a new series titled Outlaw Chicks. And now has a total of 10 novels under his belt. Yet, he still considers himself a novice to the craft. How humble is that? The author's work doesn't stop there. However, Clever Black has a bi-monthly column in Urban Grapevine Magazine, a digital magazine that caters to urban fiction, titled Publishing, Politicking, and People. His first article was published inside the magazine in May 2014, and the follow-up article is slated for a July release. Writing is his passion. Telling stories is a skill he has worked hard at every day in order to perfect and refine his craft as he evolves on the literary stage. Clever Black would like to implore all who are interested in strong story and true-to-life characters to at least have a look and see what the Harlem Family Saga, Implicit, and Outlaw Chicks has to offer as he delivers a full read in each of his works. They are full-length novels whose characters will linger on in the backs of readers' minds long after they set the book down. This is fiction at its best. Real-life tales played out within the pages of novels that will have readers yearning for more. The Harlem Family Saga is a great American story for all lovers of fiction. Implicit has an ending that is forcing readers to read the book twice. Outlaw Chicks is a story unique to the urban genre and his main body of work. The Harlem Family Saga is not just a series, but a genuine saga that cannot be categorized into one specific genre because it is simply too large of a project to be genre specific. I'm sorry. Clever Black delivers a great read each time out, and you're invited to see for yourself. Order a book today at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and partake in the Clever Black experience. Clever Black can be reached through Facebook under the name Clever Black and on Twitter at Clever Black. His works are available in ebook format and paperback on Amazon and in ebook and format on Barnes & Noble, with Outlaw Chicks being exclusively published in Kindle format only. So before we get into the man behind the pen, I'd also like to let you guys know that our next show on the circuit for, I'm sorry, Let's Talk Urban is going to be Jonna B. She is an author under Quan Presents. And she also has her own publishing company called Watch My Journey. And following Jonna B's appearance will be Maurice Bishop. He is under Strawberry Publications, and he's a veteran. He serves our country, and he is a poet. Then right after that, that will be, I believe, Friday night, we have the Mac Mama, and she will be here at 8 p.m. All shows do start at 8 p.m. If you get a chance, make sure you call in tonight, all the way up until the 13th of February. We'll have a show every night. The call-in number is 646-716-6171. So come on down and let's talk urban. Excuse us for our pre-recorded intro. We do have Clever Black on the line, and we've been waiting for this moment to talk about his first entry in Urban Grapevine Magazine, under his under his blog, which he named Publishing, Politicking, and People. He is seriously talking about his craft in here, discussing in the beginning, I guess, the man before the writing, and now we will bring him into the room with a huge welcoming. Hi, Clever.
Hello. Hey, how you doing, Felicia?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How you doing?
I can't complain. You know, when we do it on the Bible, listen anyway. So.
True that.
I'm doing great though. Let's talk about the day you put the gun down. Now, this is the first. For those who don't know, this is the first entry for people politicking and publishing.
Right.
Why'd you start here?
Well, I was, with my writing, I tend, tell it how it go, you know, and whether it be in fiction of when I decided to start doing the blog, so it'd be calling certain matters on the carpet or whatnot, so it was only right that I called myself on the carpet first. You know, and so the readers can understand where I'm coming from, exactly. You know, so when I speak on things, it's not just, you know, it's not always an opinion, but some of it is also from experience and just pure fact. You know, coupled with just good common sense. You know, and that was the reason. Really behind it, because a lot of, you know, I mean, and it wasn't written, you know, for nothing to brag on. I mean, I told it exactly how it happened, you know. I mean, it wasn't nothing tough or bravado on my part or anything like that, because that came from people who I view as being my friends, but the type of life that we was living, that was like a wake-up call to me. That, you know, the people that you think your friends really ain't your friends. You know what I'm saying? It's all about, when you get down to it, it's about the bottom line. It was about business. Forget about friends. Yeah, we shot basketball, did all that together. But, you know, it's all about the money now. You know what I'm saying? None of that mattered. And I wasn't one to operate in a particular manner. So, you know, I just put it out there like that.
It's very heartfelt, and you really delve into the coming of Clever Black. So we know Clever Black is your pen name, right?
Right.
Where'd it come from? Clever Black name? Because you sure are. But from your standpoint, where did it come from?
That was it, you know? Because when I got into it, I was like, well, you know, okay, I'm gonna tell these stories and everything, and I knew how Donald Goins did it. My uncle introduced me to him. That was 11 years old, you know, when I read those books, and when I got into writing, when I decided to write They Don't Mind Dying, I haven't picked up a book for years, you know, almost two decades. So I know a lot of authors become writers, but for me that wasn't the case. I was just a man with a story. But I also knew that, okay, if I want to tell this gritty story, how things went, you know, in the neighborhood, I have to do it in a way, you know, to where people can understand it and not be appalled by it, you know. So in order for me to do that, it got to be a clever story. So, and that's where Clever came in, and I thought about Blackmon. You know, Blackmon didn't really fit, you know, so I just dropped the Mon, came up with Clever Black, which, you know, kind of describes my writing. I wanted to go in writing clever stories from a black man's perspective, and that's how the title came about.
Is that also how your writing came about?
Yeah, and I tend to write with that concept, you know. I mean, I tend to pay very close attention to detail, you know, in order to make the story cohesive, you know.
Yes, I can see that all through the Hound series. So now, after tell everybody after your first drop in Urban Grapevine magazine, what the continuance was about the day you put down the gun, because you know by accident it kind of stopped, and it kind of. And the first article kind of stopped like midpoint in the middle of a sentence, which was really by accident, but it ended up serving well because you end up continuing this conversation on the day you put down the gun into what?
You know, it went on. It was, you know, me and the guy got into a conversation and things like that, and how the story went, you know, we was all in the same courtyard, moving around, you know, doing what we do, hustling, trying to get paid, and, you know, he would come on over, we didn't hardly use our front door, so he'd be on our front porch or whatnot, and, you know, and one day he wasn't around, I didn't know that he was around, so I'm over there trying to make money, but it was in his spot, you know. And he kind of got offended by it. But I'm thinking at the same time, well, it was all right for you, sir. I ain't say nothing when you did it. You know what I'm saying? On our porch. Yeah. So what's the problem now? And him and his partner came over there, and I could see the gun dude was holding on to and everything. And he disrespected me, called me all kind of names and everything like that, you know. And it brought tears to my eyes. I was hurt behind it because, you know, I viewed him as a friend. Now, from there, you know, and a lot of people was around to see it go down. So from there, you know, I walked off. And that's when part two picked up. I knew, you know, how things went in the hood. But I'm thinking like, okay, you know, the guy done disrespected me. He called me out my name, you know. And he had a gun. So that gave me right, you know what I'm saying, to go back the same way. You know what I'm saying? But I'm thinking, like, you know, I do this dude, and I've seen dudes get 99 years in Angola, you know, over nothing. And in my mind, that's what it would have burned down to. Because if something would have happened to him, everybody would have known who done it. You know what I'm saying? Everybody would have known who done it. And it would have eventually got back to his family. They might not have said nothing, but, you know, he come from a rough bloodline. So had things gone down like that between me and him, you know, I would have been at odds with the rest of the people in this family. You know, that was just as gangster as he was. And mind you, I can step out on my front porch and look at his front porch.
Right. Avoid the confrontation because he is across the street.
Right, he right there. Yeah, he right there. Now, what sense would that make? And then I'm staying with my grandmother. I got my cousin, you know, me and him run together. I got a brother and sister. You know what I'm saying? It just didn't make sense to me. You know, and even after all that settled down, walked off, and he rode up on me on a motorcycle just to show you how quick things could happen. And, you know, he tried to talk to me then. You know, but at the time, I ain't had no gun on me or nothing, anything like that, so I just walked off. I didn't run or, you know, turn and cut or nothing like that. I just walked off. But, you know, had he had it in his mind just to do away with me, just thinking that I had it in my mind to come back and get at him for what he said to me, I could have been dead right there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because when he approached me on that block, wasn't nobody else around, you know, and that was another part of the story. After I thought about that, I began thinking, like, I wonder how many of my friends, you know, would have actually went there for me had it gone down like that. Or would they, you know, they'd have been like, you know, well, T-Man, you know, he shouldn't have, you know, I mean, he should have handled that differently or something like that and not even done nothing about it, because that's not how I was operating. You know what I'm saying? So that kind of changed my attitude towards the game.
So what was the conclusion? I'm saying, do you think, going back, wondering, did you get the answer you were looking for?
Yeah, the issue was resolved, you know. I mean, I got up one morning. I had a partner of mine. I used to hang, me and him, you know, we sit out, smoke weed, get in everything, just talking. He always kept telling me about the job up to this college, Xavier University. You know, and he was like, man, you be out here, man, you know, doing what you're doing and everything. I mean, you can get out where I can get you on, you know what I'm saying? You're on a college campus. It's a lot of females around there, you know what I'm saying? You got to be worried about looking over your shoulder or anything like that. You know, so after that, I took him up on his offer. I got up one morning, went up there and put in the application. I got a job working up there at the college, and that's where I met my wife, you know.
Wow.
I met my wife, and from there, we, you know, and I was young at the time, 22. From there, we wound up moving out to Florida, and, you know, we had a good marriage in the beginning. Both went in young and excited. We out on our own, you know, in beautiful Florida, you know, and it
right.
worked for a while. But we married so young, eventually we outgrew one another. But that move, you know, and that was a friend. That dude, you know, that was a real friend because basically, you know, but it took me going through all that and sitting down listening to him for like the umpteenth time for the light to come on. You know what I'm saying? For the light to come on and say, man, the game ain't for you, you know?
Right.
And that's how I say it. And, you know, one thing my wife used to always say, you know, a lot of dudes don't, you know, you ain't amateur night. Now you learn how the game go. You know, you see what's going down. A lot of people don't get a second chance on amateur night. You know what I'm saying? Meaning the 22
right.
people that I knew and socialized with, they didn't get a second chance. You know, they reality came home from them when they was lying inside the funeral home. You see what I'm saying? So they didn't get that second chance. That's the way they learn how cold a game can be. You know, but it worked out for me, though. It worked out. And that guy and my wife, you know, changed my life, changed the course of my life. So that's where those first two blogs came from.
So it's a very strong introduction to talk to our listeners. It's a very strong introduction into what this blog is going to be about. This next blog, I wish I could talk about it. We pulled the magazine for two major typos. It won't drop until Saturday, but I sure wish it dropped already on the 14th because this next segment, I don't even know if they're ready for that treasure. Clever, I don't even know if they're ready for this treasure that you're about to drop on them. I don't want to really say too much about it because I don't want to give too much of it away, but the industry is taking a serious dive. And I think we need to kind of watch what we are throwing out there. With that said, I want you to give them a recap of it without telling exactly what it's about because I really want people to come to this blog and read it because it's powerful. This segment, I think it's more powerful than your introduction because I think now you're really delving into the publishing. You kind of talked about yourself like, and it falls under the people. Like you said, you want to introduce yourself first. But this segment is more about publishing itself. Can you give them a recap on what that's about?
Right. You know, I don't know. I figure I'll probably ruffle some feathers with it. You know, but
dumb,
I go. Yeah, and it's I stated in there. You know, it's not a slight It's not a personal slight. It's a reflection on the industry and what exactly are we going to leave behind for those who come behind us. You know, that's what is. Now, a lot of books have runaway success, and, you know, you can't deny that. But to me, it's like a lot of following the trend. You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to state it, like you say, in a way to where people read it, then they'll get the gist of what exactly what's being talked about. But it's a lot of trend following rather than trend setting. You know, and you see how I broke it down with numbers and everything that's in there, and a lot of things that's going on, and a lot of stories that be written, they deserve applause. You know, they deserve applause, no matter what's on the cover. You know, they deserve applause. But then you have some that come along and try to imitate it just for the sake of that's what's hot. But everybody can't do that. You know what I'm saying? Everybody can't.
Right,
everybody
right.
can't pull that off.
Like that. That's right. You got that right.
Yeah.
There's a title up here on Facebook that had everybody stirring, and I think it was called My Black Post. My Black. It was trifling because it had my pregnant black hoe. Now. That's probably one of them. Then white. But that one right there, and it had two white folks on the cover. So I don't understand where the title even came from. Do you think that these books are also getting put out with these titles to ruffle feathers for the sales, or do you truly think there's some other motive behind that? This particular book, we'll say.
Now, you know, that book there, that was, to me, in my opinion, it was all about the sales, you know. I mean, me personally, I never read it or anything like that.
I can't find it anywhere. I don't even know Portia Jackson. I can't even find her as an author, period. So I'm starting to wonder, too, it could have been a tap on the shoulder for us, or used as a marketing tool, because maybe it is going to drop because it isn't out yet. I tried to find her. That's sure enough, I wanted to talk to her.
It could be a pseudonym or something that she's using, you know, to put it out. And I really, you know, that's the thing, you know what I mean? You put something out like that, you know, and to me it's not necessary, but don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong, because a lot of those terms are being used. So for certain authors, it works because they know what they're doing. And you know what I'm saying? Like I say, I know numbers. I ain't even got to speak on that, so people can say what they want to say about books with certain titles, but I see it working. The thing is that some people come out and put those books out, and they don't know what they're doing. They're just going to slap the title on that, you know what I'm saying? And then I look at the readers. I'm in different groups, so I see what the readers saying when they say the book, you know, the title of the book don't match the story, you know what I'm saying? And I kind of focus on those type of things. You understand what I'm saying? Because now you just going to try to use that phrase or whatever to put something out, you know, to put that on the cover of the book to try to get the sales. And then when the readers read it, you know, it's not matching up.
Right. I've seen a few readers groups, a couple of books that fall under that. They are lost in the sauce. Like, what that got to do with? So the marketing side, that do you blame the author, or do you blame the author for letting the publisher?
Well, I think that can kind of be 50-50, but it's more on the author, because if the author satisfied with the title, I mean, and the situation, see, the publisher ain't gonna grab the manuscript and say this is what we gonna call the book. The publisher, you know, the right ones, the good ones, is gonna come at you and be like, you know, well, reading over it, looking at, I think this title fit. You know what I'm saying? And then you could look at some of the books that's around, and you know what, and you say, well, you got certain authors that write them type of stories, but they don't have that title on the book. You see what I'm saying? And other authors had a title on the book, but they're not writing that kind of story. That's where the problem coming in at. So it go back to the author. It goes back to the author, not the publisher. You see, because the publisher is looking at the numbers. What's gonna sell? But the author, you know, that's gonna be the, hey, their name is on that book. You know what I'm saying? Right. They're gonna be attributed. They're gonna be attributed to that book.
Definitely. You know, you're very wise and forthcoming about what's going on in the industry, and your books always do very well. Why not publish other folk? Because you are wise to this, and because you are, you kind of know right from wrong, because you know a lot of publishers don't. Why not start publishing other people's works?
I probably would, you know, later on, but I got so many stories. My mind always working on these stories, because while I'm working on one book, I'm thinking about the next book. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't be able to contribute, you know, 100%, you know, especially to a new author. And I feel like, you know, authors that's been around or whatever, been around for a minute, they should already know exactly what I know. Like I said, because I'm still learning. You know, I would love to take somebody that's new, that's coming into the game, and walk them through the process. You know, walk them through the process. But the thing is, I think, you know, it all starts with your story. Because I done made that mistake myself. Okay, I got the manuscript written. You know what I'm saying? It's all ready to go. You know what I'm saying? Let me get a book cover. You know what I'm saying? I'm so excited. I'm ready to get the book out there. But you got to pay attention to details. Get that manuscript right. You know what I'm saying? Let's get the story right first. You know what I'm saying? Because believe it or not, getting the book covers, the ISBN number, and uploading your material, that's the easy part. The hardest part is writing the story. You know? And a lot of authors, they shock themselves. You know, because to me, sometimes it's in reverse. To them, it seems like the hardest part is writing the story. And they be like, you know, well, I got the hard part out the way. Well, I got the easy part out the way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now the hard part is for me. How do I get it out there? And they got it in reverse.
I guess I would be that person, because I think the easy part is writing the story. But I guess that comes from a different standpoint of writing. When I'm coming from an era where books didn't drop like this. You understand?
Yeah.
We've been dropping books every 2 weeks. It was a year. The lifeline for your book was far more than a year. But at least a year, you know, before you put out something new. So quality work in my eyes, or seeing this thing through from beginning to end with true editing and getting your manuscript back, and, you know, with a whole bunch of red marks and, you know, and taking this out, or ain't flowing right, or you lost me over here with all your little editing markups and sending it back, that still ain't enough, because, you know, when you send it back and reread it, and back then, and have you going through edits all over again. The editing process took 3 and 4 months just to get that one last finished product to send to some more readers to read through it. You understand? So I guess from my point of view, I'm saying, that the writing is the easy part. Everything else is the hard part, the editing.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. After everything is all said and done, because to me the most enjoyable part of the whole process is writing the story as you begin to see the story unfold. You see what I'm saying? Because it's a difference when you get 15,000 words and how the story progresses when you're at 50,000 words. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
I enjoy that entire process. And then once you get the whole story written, once you write that last paragraph, now you got it done. Now you can sit back and you go back and you can reread it. You can change some things, add more details to the scene, to certain scenes, take things out, put things in, you know. That's the easy part. You know what I'm saying? I guess what I'm saying, I'm trying to say here, is that for me, writing a story, you know, is easy, but it's also the most tedious and difficult process. I'm saying after you get everything done, you know what I'm saying, then comes your book cover. Then comes getting your ISBN and your copyrights. That's the easy part, but I think a lot of new authors sign because they don't know the process, what comes after. You know what I'm saying? They get their manuscript and everything done. They sign because they don't know how to get the ISBN number. They don't know where to go to get the book cover. They don't know how to upload their own material to
but
Amazon.
It's so sad because it's so, you know what? We live in an era where everything is at your finger, one click. You understand? It is so much information on Facebook alone, Google, and on the social networks that you are in, Google Plus, all this information is like in a bunch of it. There are so many companies out here that are giving you free webinars. They are giving you the free information. With this magazine, I run into some folk, honey, that will blow your mind of what they don't know. I'm not talking strategy thinking. I'm talking the basics of what you just said. Read your ISBN number. You know how easy that is to type into the search engine?
Mm-hmm.
You know how easy that is to type into Google and get core information? I'm not talking about a bunch of fluff. That, oh, my God, this website is saying this and this one. I'm talking about just when you type it in, your first five things will be the core of how to do that. The new authors, I think they come from a reader's standpoint. And I used to read a lot, and this is where I am. People claim that I never was a reader. I was always a reader first. But I think that they come from that standpoint. They are blinded and assume that it's so hard. And then they realize when they sign with these little so-called publishing companies, all you did was what? I can't believe I'm getting all my money taken from me, and this is all they do. And it's out there for you to even know. Literally an abundance. I don't even know why our industry is so saturated with don't-knowers. You understand? Because it is out there.
Right.
There's so many Facebook groups. People don't even know to think Facebook group. People don't even have it in their head as to say, I wonder where I can get that kind of information. Where do you think the authors hang out at? Where do you think readers popping up out of nowhere? You understand? The lack of homework is ridiculous. This is really serious. Because we're not playing with something that's not passion filled. This is serious. This is not a game.
Right.
This is
exactly, this
is a gifted craft. I'm talking about half-ass writers. For you to be able to write half-ass still a gift, because a half-assed writer could be taught and trained and with enough passion to grow into a great writer. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But for the lack of information out here, they can't say that, because there's a whole lot, there's tons of it. It's too much, you ask me. There's so much information, I'm overwhelmed when I see stuff like, oh, you could do that? You know, it don't take much to click on something and to find no information out. So in this next segment, you touch publishing, right? Now, when the politics coming in?
Politics, I'm waiting to see, you know, which is one of these, you know, these world leaders is going to throw their names into the hat, you know. And all I just have to say about that right now is that, you know, I just wish people would just stand up and say what they believe instead of answering a question politically correctly. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, you can't pull the wool over people's eyes, you know. And a lot of times in politics, people look for affirmation rather than information. They just want somebody to confirm what they already believe, and that's what a lot of politicians do. And that's a dangerous thing, you know. That's a dangerous thing.
You think that's closely relative to publishers?
In publishing?
Publishers. More so like head of state and presidents and state senators, these publishers, because they do the same. A lot of them do the same. They pull the wool over the eyes and they give speeches and they don't always live up to the end of it.
Well, you know, I can't speak on that. You know, I mean, because I'm signed with Wright House, and I don't have no problem with it. And I knew what it was going in. That's the difference. That's the difference. To know what it is, you know, when you're going in. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes you'll make a business decision, because Outlaw Chicks would never have been written had I not signed the Wright House. That was just some stories that I had just writing out and just had them sitting there. You know what I'm saying? So that was more like a test and a challenge to myself, and also a way for me to tap into other readers. You know what I'm saying? Ooh. So that's working out.
Y'all. I want y'all to know that this gave y'all a whole bunch of branding information. But go ahead, Clever.
Right. I mean, you have to know what it is going in. And I know I have good product, you know, and I understand, I see exactly what Wright House doing, and I respect it to the highest, because they got authors that's on the roster that do numbers. I ain't going to even say the numbers, you know, so as far as that is concerned, you know, people can say, and, you know, they can talk as much as they want to talk about that, you know what I'm saying? But those books are selling for a reason, and, you know what I'm saying, and all of us don't always knock it out the park. You don't always knock it out the park all the time. But when you got a concept, you know what I'm saying? When you got a concept that's working and your story is on point, you know, whether you're a first-time author or not, you know what I'm saying? If you get with the right publisher, they're not only doing it for themselves, they're doing it for you also. And it's up to that author to decide whether they want to grow or not and branch out. And it gets better as the writing goes on. At least it should, you know, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? These mid-level publishers that are doing what they're doing, the ones that are doing it, that's doing it right, you know what I'm saying? I advise any first-time author that has their act together and has a vision and a plan on what exactly it is that they want to do going in and where they want to end up at. You know what I'm saying? I advise anybody, you know, check the team out. You know what I'm saying? Each publisher is not the same. That you'll get raped by some of them. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of people laugh at them deals. Okay, we're going to split 34 cents. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people laugh at it. But a lot of people that's laughing, you know what I'm saying, they don't know the numbers behind it. And, you know, it's
exactly.
a format and a formula.
I believe that.
Yeah, you got to be on the inside. I ain't saying nothing about nothing. You got to be on the inside to see how it works.
Okay.
Until that happens, people can talk and say what they want to say about that.
Right. There's a lot of bandwagon followers when it comes to that topic. You know, I was able to sit and talk to Cole one day for maybe an hour or so, and his philosophy behind the publishing. You're right. You don't have to sit and claim numbers. They are here because when you type in Wright House Publishing Presents into the Amazon search, all his books that he's published are coming up. And forget the ranking because you know that's fluff. What speaks is every last one of these books got to have at least 20 some odd reviews. So it is almost like a mark saying, we get your book in people's hands. Also, she's a strong writer herself. When you start adding all these names that are up under Wright House, your philosophy in gaining new readers is on point. You understand? Because all these writers have their own following.
Right.
So when you have a strong house, head of household, then you good money. But when the head is weak, it don't matter who's underneath your publishing company. You know what I'm saying? I've seen publishers that have 30, 40, 50 authors, and none of them getting reviews, though. If they ain't getting reviews, there's really no stats in saying that your book is being read. And
right.
30. Go ahead.
That's the whole thing. Because, see, I can do that myself. You know, I put somebody out, but, you know what I'm saying, to sustain numbers. You know what I'm saying, to sustain numbers over a period of time. You know, I have a niche audience, and it's starting to branch out, you know, because I gain readers every month. You know what I'm saying? But authors, some authors come in, you know, they got their manuscript and everything already written. Let's get it out there. You know what I'm saying? With my BMW, and it don't work like that. You know, a lot of times it don't work like that. So, not knowing the percentages, not knowing the breakdown, and not willing to be patient, you know what I'm saying? That's where I think a lot of animosity comes in. You know what I'm saying? Because, you go in, you know what I'm saying? How much really can you make off a 99-cent book if you split 34 cents? You know what I'm saying, 50-50 or 60-40 or what have you. How much money can you really make? But, you know what I'm saying, as the more...
I was under, when me and J.P. Simmons had Queen Minus Books, and I was under Queen Minus Books, and then we did a 50-50 venture. When you could sit back and get $3,000 in a royalty check, people don't believe it. You understand how you make that and... you know, splitting that with somebody. Hustle. It's called hustle. For months, I was catching $2,800, $2,500, $2,400. And I'm splitting that. You know, that money is out there. You just have to have a strong head of household. And Julia was a strong head of household. You understand? She ran her... The family, she ran the publishing company like a family. You know, it ended up hurting her in the end because of her take on family, you know, wasn't the same as the authors, you know.
Yeah.
But other than that, she was the strongest for all of us because a lot of us that were under Queen Minus, numbers ain't nothing like that. People do need to pay attention to when you sign, how people say, know your audience. know who you're talking to. Know who you're signing with.
Right.
No big sign on it. And if the publisher can't really set and tell you the things that may happen that ain't happy, you know, you need that publisher that's going to say, you know, I could promise you a lot of things, you know what I mean? But that promise comes with you promising a lot of things. You know what I mean? I think authors don't realize that this is a give and take. You have to give. You can't just expect a sign under juju printing, publishing, you know, that's my job. My book is my job, the job. They don't understand
right.
that after that comes a whole lot more to it. And you can't blame your publishing company for numbers if you sharing nonsense on your Facebook page and never drop a book link. You understand?
Exactly. See, that's what I mean when I say the writing is the hardest part, you know, because you take your time and you craft the story, you know what I'm saying, and you look around and you find a publisher that sort of fits your niche, you know, what it is that you're trying to do. But a lot of artists don't have that vision. You know what I'm saying? They don't have that vision. I'm talking about a lot of the new authors, because they'll put something together, you know what I'm saying, and they don't even have a clue of what they're going to write in the second part, let alone the third part, you know.
Right.
So now you got stories that's becoming watered down because they're just adding stuff to it now. You know what I'm saying? When the story could have been told in the first book, even if you're going to do a three-part to it, you know what I'm saying? You could tell a whole story in that first book and then move on to something else in the second book instead of just dragging it out, you know? But a lot of authors go in and they don't have that foresight to do that. All they know is they got to do three books.
They don't have a full plot. They don't have a full story. They don't have the substance that it takes to push out a series, a beginning of a series that could be a standalone. Is that what you're saying?
Right. But, I mean, each book that you write in a series could be a standalone. If something get resolved in that first book and then you move on to something else, you know, you resolve, you know, I mean, that's just me. Every writer does it different. And the way I do it, you know, it works for me and you know, the people that read and follow my stories. The same way another author do it differently, you know what I'm saying? And it works for them. It works well for them. So I say to each his own, you know, but, I mean, when you click on certain books, you know what I'm saying, and the authors have to realize that too. When they click on certain books, I mean, even when they click on their own books to look at their reviews, and on the first page you got a lot of people agreeing with your one- and two-star reviews, then you might want to, you know, you might want to pay attention to what's being said. You see what I'm saying? Versus somebody clicking on a book that has a lot of five-star reviews and you got a lot of people in agreement with it. And it's not no bandwagon thing. It's not no bandwagon thing because your one and two-star reviews is being left alone. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's not going to like everything. But if you have more people in agreement with your one- and two-star reviews than what you do with your five-star reviews, now you take that counsel. But some authors just, you know, oh, they hating on me, you know?
Yeah.
They just, them haters.
But, you know, it's funny how them haters formed a clique and everybody's kind of zoning in on a certain problem in your writing. I think, but it's, you know, it's also hard for somebody to, they know. You think they don't know? They know. You know they know. When they see 10 below 3-star ratings and they all kind of saying the same thing, and they go, you know, we do our research when we get a 1-star or something that you're shocked at. I don't care if you thought, no, my book's a 5-star. When you get a 4-star, you'd be like, what? Believe me, when you get it, as authors, the smarter ones. But I go and I click it. I want to see who she is. I want to see, you know, does she really review? Because them are your haters when you go up there and you get a one star and she only reviews three books. You know what I'm saying? And all of them are like
right. Negative. Right.
But when you go and you click out and you got a 1, 2, 3 star and you're not too happy with it, and you go click it and this person's got 172 books under the belt, and there's an array of star statuses, there's something that maybe you need to pay attention to. But
right. With
that said, you don't got much. We only got 4 minutes left. You drop off. I never really got to talk to you. We never do. Yeah, you get to talk about your anything after the Hound series. You know, because my reader that's been reading for Uglank for a long time is Siren. And you got this halo over your head when she talk about you. Outlaw Chicks has 14 five-star reviews. Now, all these reviews are kind of touching all different forms of how you write. I want to say, no, what's the name is better, like the Hollow series, but it seems that this Outlaw Chick series is doing well. Will you be doing Outlaw Chicks 3? Because this dropped in January. How far
are
you facing out your work?
It's usually about, you know, 7 to 8 months now in between the books, because I really have to, you know, the plots get complicated, so I have to hash them out. You know what I'm saying? And so now it's about seven to eight months in between, just for me to hash out the plots. You know, I try to keep it unique. Try to keep it different, and these stories, they take off, you know. Books take, but they take off kind of slow. But I'm developing something, you know, because a lot of people say, well, I almost put part one down, you know. But after I read part two, now they're waiting on part three of Outlaw Chicks, and they're waiting on part nine of the Highland Family Saga. So I got both of them working, and I'm still early in Outlaw Chicks, you know. Ain't no telling how far it's gonna go, you know. That's my point. It's all in your writing. And as I say, I have a niche audience, people that's willing to stick with the story and don't have short attention span and able to follow, you know, the plot.
I think it's not also that. I think for you, you're like developing this this recipe. Inside Urban Grapevine Magazine, we have an article called The Right Recipe, W-R-I-T-E. It is really telling you the ingredients to, like, these five-star books that last long. You know how these writers come up with it. You are developing almost like the formula of writing. You're developing, mastering your style of writing. Because I don't know too many people who can put out part eight and people still standing around waiting for. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know nobody who could do that except the Bitch series. And even that after a while was a little extra. But when you write this Outlaw Chicks 3, is it going to go on? Is it going to keep going on? Because I know you don't drag. You are literally telling stories. Can't stand by themselves. Almost like when you watch a really good series on television. You know what I'm saying? Where you really don't know what the next segment's going to be like. Will your next segment of Outlaw Chicks be expected?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it won't be the last one. And it's you know, a character that come back in from part one that's going to cause a whole lot of chaos. And then that book there is going to allow me to get into politics. You know, if you know Louisiana, you know how Louisiana is crooked on politics. So, I mean, and these people is eventually going to be a nemesis to the Holland Family Saga. So basically I'm showing how, you know, the Holland Family Saga's most formidable foe on American soil came to be. So when they do collide, you know what I'm saying? When everything do collide, I mean, people, I want readers to be wondering, well, who gonna win, you know? Because
that's
I mean,
how like you create this, you create a world. That's what I want to say. You kind of create this world of things happening that end up blending effortlessly, like and to pull the so the Holland series starts what year? What did you start it in?
The Holland Family Saga was. It started in 99, but it went as far back as 1865 to show how the family actually, you know, got started. I didn't go that far back with the outlaw chicks. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a history segment of lives and living.
Right. And see, the thing is, when it's all said and done, you know, I would like this work just to remain so that people can read it. You know, I mean, sometimes I envision just somebody coming from another planet and discovering our libraries and, you know, all our data. And you know, literature lasts a long time.
That's
you
right.
know, you got scrolls in there. So, and that's a way how to do nonfiction and fiction. So when people read nonfiction, they look at all the things that happened through the course of humankind, and they read fiction and see how it matches up. You know what I'm saying? But fiction tends to go just a little bit deeper and expose a lot more of the ugly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of things that happen when you know, 100 years from now, when somebody pick up, you know, one of my novels and they read about these things, you know what I'm saying? When they read about what Faith Bender and how she lived her life and the things that she did. What is moonshine? I mean, why did she kill this officer? You know, who is this dirty cop? You know, expose all the other aspects of mankind, but yet still be able to show that compassion that humans have, that we have towards one another. We still are able to love, you know what I'm saying? We still are able to care and show concern for our friends. You know what I'm saying? That's what I want to leave behind. Just a picture of America, kind of like Norman Rockwell when he captured America during his time. You know what I'm saying? And his pain is when he captured Wall Street. You know what? I capture urban fiction. You know what I'm saying? I capture crime fiction.
Urban
and urban living. All the ugly things that go along with trying to eke out survival. You know what I'm saying? When the odds are against you. That's what I write about.
Right. For those who are blind but still seek the American dream, what you really got to go through the trenches to get just a glimpse of it. You know what I mean? Because I think it's a falsehood, but when you truly believe that it's out there and you're coming from nothing, you know what I mean?
Right.
I think that you're creating a legacy, and people don't realize when you write something and you put it out for mainstream to read, it's forever embedded in our writing history of urban fiction, of literature, of black literature, African-American writers, or whatever. I think if these publishers sat back and said the same about other people's work, half of these books wouldn't be out. Because I don't think that's what they're thinking. They're thinking money, 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 this industry, you can get it, you can get it. You understand? But they're not thinking about what they're leaving behind, what they're handing down to the, you know what I mean, for generations to come. I don't think writers are even thinking like you. I don't even think they're thinking, even the stronger writers, I don't even think they're fully grasping that this is stuff people are going to pick up and read that we don't know. And if we don't tell the story like it should be told, and regardless of what you're writing, it's misleading for generations to come. and it sets your benchmark low when your writing ain't worth nothing. Because future readers are going to read garbage. You understand?
Right.
And they're going to branch off of garbage when they should be branching off of what Erica Bendoff said about Outlaw Chicks too. She says, I wish I could give this book 15 stars. It was just that good. This book left me speechless and had my emotions all over the place throughout the entire book. Clever has a unique way of pulling you into his character's world, and you just can't help but become attached. I love reading the background stories of the characters. To me, it made it just that much more personal. I fell in love with Franklin Patterson myself, and my heart broke for Sheriff Mobley's daughter and Faye Bender. I can't wait to the next installment of these Outlaw Chicks. So it's basically what we just said. You are setting up a world of storytelling.
Right, and it's many more out there that's doing it also, you know, and those are the ones that, you know, that deserve commendation, you know, because they take the craft seriously, you know, they take the craft seriously. Now, what I write is, you know, is different from a lot of other writings, you know, and that's what worked for me. Like I say, it's a niche. It's a niche, and it's a lot of people that's in that niche, though, because it's something different, something unique, and it's compelling to them. You know what I'm saying? Rather, you know, and they read other books as well. But when, you know, they always come back, you know, and that's the thing that works for them. They allow me the time to put the story together, and they'll tell me, hey, someone write about this and there. You know what I'm saying? They'll tell me that, but that's rare. That's rare when it happens, but it does happen because I understand you can't please everybody. Some people, if I was kill in every book, they'd be satisfied. You know what I'm saying? That might not work for everybody because they want other things. They want to see how the family interacts with one another. You know, and I try to do that because that's a reflection on America. Even criminals had downtime. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Even criminals had downtime. They had people that they love, people that they care about, and things, other things that they do besides committing crimes. You know?
Right.
And that don't... Go ahead.
I want to read something from Siren. She had wanted to come on the show, but she said that she's going to have to catch you next time. You know, she's a good big fan, so. Clever Black continues to shake up the African-American literary world. His writing does not focus on the struggle of a specific ethnicity. No, Clever writes novels that will reach all demographics and expand the reader's mind. Outlaw Chicks 2 was a shock to my system. I don't know how you did that one, but child can read. Outlaw Chicks 2 was a shock to my system. I did not see the story coming, but for the reasons one may think, but not for the reasons one may think. I had been reading about a certain character in another series belonging to Clever, and there was minimal background information. However, after reading this book, the characteristics and traits of the character are thoroughly understood. Clever weaves a story like no other and puts a new meaning to 6 degrees of separation. Honestly, I am now wondering how Clever keeps track of everyone in the storyline. Sometimes an author has too much going on in the book and the chronological order of incidents gets skewed. But not with Clever Black. He is consistently written his books with accurate timelines, and it's rather scary. I am familiar with the real Bender family and their history. I watched a few documentaries about the sadistic family. Clever is like a walk-in historical encyclopedia. I love it. And then she goes down to break down Faye and Benita, Franklin, and Jane Doe. And she says she's calling the character Jane Doe because I don't want to spoil it for others. She writes a really good review. She also says Clever's writing knows no boundaries. He does not put limitations on himself or his writing. He does not conform to what is typical or common in African-American literature. He does not write to make a paycheck. He writes because of passion. He is changing the definition of urban writing, and I am most pleased. I will try and patiently wait for the next book, but really, I won't be patient. When you get reviews like that, what's it do for you?
It spurs me on it just to continue on to keep writing those types of stories, you know, because that actually started from about an 8-minute segment that I watched on Deadly Women. It was about 11 minutes, something like that. And they described the Bender family as being the first serial killer family and back in the 1870s. And for some reason, the name Faye just popped up into my mind. I said, just based on these characters and what they did, you know, I like to write a story with a character named Faye Bender, but give you know, the background, well, have her come from the background of the actual Bender family, which they was from Cherryville, Kansas, which a lot of my stories, as to how the family moved forward, they began to take place in the Midwest, because a lot of stories take place on the East Coast, you know, or the West Coast. You know, I said, well, I'm going to go to the Midwest, the heart of the Midwest, Kansas, Oklahoma, and, you know, what I'll put some outlaws out there, because they got outlaws out there too. And I ain't never really seen no story that was really set out, you know, in that particular area, because most of them come out of Brooklyn, Chi-Town, you know what I'm saying, L.A., places like that. So, you know, that gave me a different setting for the outlaw chicks, and it actually started in the state of Iowa. And I was kind of worried because I had a reader tell me, she inboxed me and asked me, say, are you going to only have white people in your book? And I said, well, no, it started out that way. They got black people in there later on, you know. And she said, oh, okay, because I wasn't going to read it if all you had was white people. I'm thinking, like, why? You know what I'm saying? Why? So black people? So, and they did some horrible things in the book. So you mean to tell me so long as it was black people doing horrible things, you're fine with that? Ain't got no problem with that. You know what I'm saying? But, hey, they got other races that commit crimes too. And you read the Holland Family Saga, they got people from all walks of life, Italians, you know what I'm saying, South Americans, Mexicans, Asians, people from all walks of life that's committing crimes. I'm not just highlighting black folks. You know what I'm saying? Like you say, I create a world. Yeah, it's a world of criminals.
Right.
Criminals come in all shapes, forms, and fashions, and from all walks of life and races of life. You know, so I couldn't, that kind of, but that reader, I was like, okay, I don't know because I haven't heard from her since then, but I was like, okay, let me see if I can get you with this one. You know what I'm saying? To change your mind. You know, because it's all the reader's life to be taken away. But how can you get taken away if you're constantly remaining in that same bubble? You know?
Yeah. Definitely.
Man.
You're so right. You know, and you are creating a world, a real world, a real happenings, just digging below the surface, you know what I mean? It's not just surface talk. You really dug deep into the history of people. And I think that's what why your writing lasts so long and the impact is so strong on folks. But you did your job, even with her, because her being able to feel that right there, she knew. She knew that had to have been more to this because she would have just put the book down. You understand? You piqued
right.
enough of her curiosity to want to know. And that's what I think that's what writing these series is about, piquing the interest
right.
of people wanting to know what's next.
Right, exactly. And just writing books, period. Because what if I do something outside of Outlaw Chicks and How the Family Saga, in which I did with the book Implicit, you know? I said, okay, I'm going to do one book, and just going to have a beginning, a middle, and the end. That's it. And we just ain't going to be no part two. You know, whatever happened in that book, that's the end of it, you know?
It really is a good book. It ain't going nowhere else. Implicit ain't going nowhere else. You're not going to bring up Jessica Swage.
The thing is, they transferred. When I did it, I did it right after part 7 of the Highland Family Saga. So some of the characters that was in part 7 had spilled over into Implicit. And then those characters in Implicit, if you want to follow and see what happened to them, they carried over into part 8 of the Highland Family Saga. You see what I'm saying? So we don't go back into Implicit, but now them characters has been tied into the Highland Family Saga because of their affiliation with certain characters within that saga. So they still around. If you want to read more about them, well, pick up the Highland Family Saga and see what's going on with them.
Okay. So we have gone into overtime. I keep going into overtime. I get mesmerized by your train of thought and how you schemed these stories and kind of weave these little worlds to, like she said, demographically be, I don't know, like stitched at the ends of each other. When, not even at the end, some in the middle, almost like a map, like the United States map. You got this city, this state connected to this state on this end. But, you know, if you go around a different way, you know, there's a connection over here, too. And I think that's what makes people continuously wanting to know what Clever Black is doing because of that. You know, telling what you put out and where it'll spin off of. Because you're more so spinning your tales than continuing them. You're doing a lot of spin-offs and pulling, letting you get attached to certain people, and then once you're attached, you pull them into a story where even more attachments happen. You know what I mean? It's almost like a soap opera.
and I kind of write it. You know, I kind of write it like that. I had my music playing in the background, and you know, I might have the TV on a basketball game or, you know, during football season, be football or something like that. But every now and then, if I'm writing a scene and I got the music playing, I look up at the TV and I kind of visualize it, you know, how that scene would look if it was to be on the TV screen. So I kind of write to that, you know, but it's on paper. So that's where the detail come in because I got to paint a clear picture. You know what I'm saying?
Well, how clever? How? Like Siren was saying, you're building these worlds, and she's even mesmerized on how well you keep everything in chronological order. How are you writing the Howland Family Saga? How are you writing this? Are you freestyling? Do you sit back and say, this is my story, this is what I want to tell, break down your characters and weave them in? How do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You ain't
telling? You know, it's something that everybody does every day of their life, which is think, plain and simple. Think.
That ain't enough,
you know,
whatever. Don't go
in. Huh? Everybody do
enough.
It every day of their life. But the thing is, I remember the stories. I remember the stories. I remember all the stories. You know, I wrote them. So I remember what each character did in each story. You know what I'm saying? the thing, what I have to do is go back and look at the date when I'm working on the scene and look at what this particular character was doing around that particular time as the story goes on. If I'm doing a flashback to bring the story forward. You see what I'm saying? And sometimes it don't always match up. So I say, okay, I got to scrap that. You know what I'm saying? Because the timeline don't match up. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of it just goes back to thinking. And it was a saying that, you know, the higher you go up on a tier, that's the more powerful people that you know. And I would break it down from somebody playing Little League football. Okay, it's a lot of Little League football teams. And you just take this one particular, I'm going to say Walter Payton when he played Little League, you know, wherever he played. And on the other side, you got, I'm going to say Jim McMahon, wherever he played. You know what I'm saying? Two of the best to do it. But they, in the end, both of them going to wind up being Chicago Bears. But, okay, from Little League, they go to middle school or whatever, and they play. Now it gets smaller. That circle gets smaller. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Walter Payton, Jim McMahon, still there. When they get to high school, the circle gets even smaller because the competition is more intense. Walter Payton and Jim McMahon is still there. When they get to college, the circle becomes even smaller. So I took that with the Highland Family Saga. See, it all starts with them because they're so high up and they're so powerful. They know a lot. They know a lot of people because of their journey. That's where a lot of the tie-ins come at, because of that family and the trek that they took. You know, so like you say, a lot of it spans off from the Highland Family Saga because of the position that they are in and within a saga overall, you know. So so many, and as I told the story, you have so many characters along the way that comes in, and that allows for the spinoffs and the tie-ins. You see what I'm saying? But I have to go back and match those dates and look, okay, this person was this age at this time when it happened. So when I do the flashback, that have to be on point, and that person had to be where they were, not only book 3, but in also book 6. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It has to match up. Right. But I also, I set it back because I can't catch up with myself. Because if I'm writing in 2014, that means the story been not caught up with itself. You know what I'm saying? And it's one book I covered 30 years. I can't cover 30 years now because I'll be writing into the future. And the way the Highland Family Saga is right now is in 2008, so I could maybe do 5 years in order to keep from catching up with myself. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. I asked one of your readers, I asked in general, somebody to name the top 5 crazy characters, and Lisa Lingard came up. Who is she?
That's she's an FBI agent, and she did some good things in part 3 for the Highland Family Saga, but her true identity came out in part 8. She's an FBI agent that operates on the wrong side of the law. She's an FBI agent and a federal prosecutor.
Wow.
You know, she's a powerful woman. But, okay, when people read part 8, they was like, well, you know, they kind of had the suspicion just based on the things that she did during certain trials. It's like she took a payoff, you know what I'm saying, in order to let one of the main characters in the Highland Family Saga walk free. She took a payoff. But it was more to her than that, and it came out in part 8 of the Highland Family Saga. But when I did Outlaw Chicks Part 2, she was 51 in the Highland Family Saga Part 8. But when Outlaw Part 2 dropped, she was 22 and had just graduated college. So I went back and told how she became the woman that she is.
Oh, man.
You know.
Let me tell you why. I said, oh, man. When I asked this question, Let me tell you why I'm disappointed that you did that. When I asked this question, the reader said, you know, one of the craziest, her top three, one of the craziest characters was Lisa. And I asked this because we have the Sweet series coming out, and we're going to be I'm joining forces with another publishing company, and we're going to put out a submission for a I want to say series, but it's not, a series of books that it's called the Sweet series, and the first book is going to be Sweet 201, and it's a series of, the Sweet series is a series of doctors in the same medical group, Dr. Brady, Dr. Connors, Dr. Jabri, and Dr. Brady is the first of the series. He is a psychologist with a second floor window office space in the city, New York City, Harlem, to be exact. His desk is mahogany oversized. He is a stout man and has a deep voice, and his fingertips smell like Cuban cigars. His plaid blazers are always tight-fitted, but his shoes, expensive. Sweet 201, a sharp right once you get off the elevator. His secretary's name, Mrs. Alba Ruiz. She is red-skinned, Hispanic with a short cropped haircut. She is medium height, weight, and attractive. This anthology allows authors to bring their craziest character to get help by seeing Dr. Brady. It will also bring shine to your previous work in which this character comes from. Also can serve as a closure for that character or explanation of that character's behavior. That's why I said, oh, man. We sure was coming
to you. Oh, nah, with that character, that, nah. Let me tell you, they waiting for that character demise. I mean, everybody, people that's reading Harlem Family Saga, they can't wait till that day come. You know what I'm saying? She ain't going to no counseling. Lisa Vanguard is not going to counseling. And knowing that character, she wouldn't go anyway. Not the way she was written. Nah, not the way she. If you read Outlaw Chicks Part 2 and the things that she done did and the things she done did in Part 8, just that character alone, she is not going to counseling. And the things that she did, I mean, nah. She, you know, it's going to be hard. I mean, her demise is going to have to be epic. You know what I'm saying? They're going to have a symphony playing. You know what I'm saying? They're going to mark that down as a holiday when she go, because she done wreak so much havoc. And she's so proud. At the same time, you know why she's doing that, she got three members of the Holly Family Saga organization locked up. She about to put them away for 30 years. But she don't even want that. She want them on the street so she can kill them. That's how cold-blooded she is. That a character like that, she is not going to counseling. She is not going to counseling.
Wow. Yeah. I get it now. I understand.
Yeah. So, but if you want me to be a part of it, you know, I can always come up with something. You know?
Yeah, because it's going to be a series of doctors, and they're going to be a psychiatrist, and people will be able to put their crazy.
What year is it taking place?
This is taking place in the here and now.
Oh, okay. I had a character, but, you know, I mean, she might be in her. That might place her. She being a, it might work. It might. We'll have to talk offline, you know, about that.
Yeah, you
know.
You don't want to tell too much. Yeah, because
It'll work. And coming out of Outlaw Chicks, too, it'll work. Because she would be up in age by then, and yeah, it probably would. But we'll talk offline, and I'll explain it to you.
All right. Okay.
If you want me to be a part of it.
Oh, yeah. Come on, y'all. I wouldn't have brought it up.
Okay.
Bush. Everybody, you've got to tune in for our next chat with Clever, which will be soon. Soon as Outlaw Chicks 3 drops. And maybe, or Holland 9. I would like to thank you, Clever, for coming out and sharing as much as you have of yourself with listeners, because, you know, a lot of authors just want to share their books, you know what I mean? And I do appreciate you personal and from all aspects, people, politicking, and publishing. We'd love to have you back, and you guys keep your eyes open for Outlaw Chicks 1 and 2. What do you think they should read first?
Well, they got to read it on my time. They got to start out with the Howling Family Saga, Part 1.
Okay.
You know, Outlaw Chicks, Part 1. And then come back, read the Howling Family Saga. Either way, you know, starting out that way. But once they get to Howling Family Saga, then, you know, they're going to have to follow that all the way through. But, you know, Outlaw Chicks, Part 1, the Howling Family Saga, Part 1. But I would recommend the Howling Family Saga, Part 1.
Okay. Okay, so you heard it from the guy who pinned it, Let It Bleed. Again, Clever, thank you for coming out. And we hope to hear more from you. Well, we will. When this magazine drops on Saturday, you guys keep your eye out on the May issue. Has its first segment in it, and I think the next one is November. Kind of like where the magazine drops every 2 months, it skips a month, and then every 2 months, and it skips a month. So don't think that you missed out on something, because there's still only 3 segments of that now. So be prepared. I don't even think you can be for this next one. So much truth is in here. And again, Treasure, Clever, thank you so much. You remind me of Treasure Blue, your passion in the writing, not necessarily the style, but how you see things is futuristic.
Yeah, hey, like I say, you know, it's all about preserving what we have, you know, because in my opinion, we don't want to be taken as a joke. When they are, at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? When they read over historical fiction and you know, and they look at this particular genre, paranormal or whatever genre that they look at that, and they see urban fiction, and they kind of chuckle, you know? We don't want to get chuckled at. You know what I'm saying? Because if you want to, you know, we want somebody to be able to point the finger and say, you know, they kind of captured an error with the work that they put out. We don't want to be taken for granted. You know, that's why I write what I write, you know, and I speak how I speak, you know. I'm only one man, and I'm going to carry my torch. But, you know, while I'm running with it, but why I do it, you know, when I carry that torch, I want it to shine on everybody, you know. So, in other words, let's see ourselves, you know what I'm saying? And we can do better, because it seems like we're the only ones that get scrutinized.
Yeah, I'll say that. That's true right there. All right, we're going to wrap things up. We do applaud you for sharing and Kim, your passion on over to Let's Talk Urban. Thank you for stepping up to the platform.
Thanks. Look forward to doing it again. I enjoyed it.
All right. Good night.
All right. All right. Same to you.
All right. That was such a clever flag. And I say it just a touch of clever black, because he is, wow, he is so much more to come. He's a man that is, I don't know, continuously in the making, if you will. Even though he is writing under a pen name, it seems to fit him best. Clever. Yes, he is. Very. Representing the black man from all angles. Yes, he does. Again, thank you, Clever Black, for coming out. And again, folks, we have gone into overtime. I don't know why I keep doing this, but I get so enthralled and strong mind. I love the creative mind. I love creative thinking. People say that with these shows, listeners' attention spans are short, but only for nonsense. And we don't bring nonsense to the platform. So this hour and a half of cleverism, that's cute, of cleverism is much appreciated. And it is a jewel. It is seriously a jewel dropped. And we will be coming out with the sweet series. We will be taking submissions in March. Details will be on www.urbangrapevinemag.com under the submissions tab. We are embarking on a world of publishing from a new perspective. Urban Grapevine Magazine is going to join forces with another author, and I will also Urban Grapevine Publishing and the media. And that's these radio shows on Let's Talk Urban One. The whole entire umbrella of what I've been doing of Mag 3 will join forces with someone of my likeness, but not really. You understand? I don't want to really say too much, but she is a younger spinoff of me with 5 times the amount of creativity. And I think this is going to bring a lot more structure to UGG Mag 3, because it's going to have me on my A game. Right now I'm probably on my B-minus game, but I'm growing and I'm learning, and I'm loving this world of urban living, urban loving, and urban storytelling. And we will continue to bring out Urban Grapevine Magazine. We are in the works of adding a junior editor-in-chief, and she will oversee the runnings of Urban Grapevine Magazine, allowing me some free-up time for this publishing venture that I'm about to embark on. And we also have put Let's Talk Urban TV on hold because of my move from the East Coast to the West Coast. And I was building a TV platform on the East Coast. And I'm uprooted now, and I'm on the West Coast, and I will be bringing Let's Talk Urban Television to the West Coast, and it will have a West Coast, East Coast appeal. With that said, I am announcing that we will be doing Let's Talk Urban Television, and our first will be Let's Talk Urban, and it will be a talk show live. We are tapping into some negotiations with certain syndications, also public access television, and to spin it off, we will be offering our trial of our taping for Let's Talk Urban at the Harlem Book Fair. Details for that will also hit the website in March, where if you were looking to be televised, and you are in the world of urban living, urban loving, urban writing, urban reading, urban publishing, then this is the platform that you need to get on. We will be doing live tapings at the Harlem Book Fair, and it will go into syndication on several streaming networks. So be on the lookout for that. Be on the lookout so you can be interviewed at the Harlem Book Fair And the seating will be by invitation only. It is the seating will be exclusive to only 20 Urban Fiction strongest readers and followers. Not that you can't watch it, because it is the Harlem Book Fair, and it will be live and it will be outside. But to get seating in gifts and all the little extras that come with being a personal invite will get you. It will remain exclusive. I'm reading and talking. It will remain exclusive. So if you get this invitation, take it seriously. And only the serious need to reply, because we really are about to do the damn thing. We are about to bring urban fiction to a whole new forefront, from urban fiction adult to young adult to children's books. This platform is going to be serious. So gather your necessary requirements that are going to come out on www.urbangrapevinemag.com, and make sure that you meet all the requirements that are up there, because just one thing missing will have your stuff pushed to the side. I thank you for listening to Let's Talk Urban on Radio 1, and our next guest, our next couple of guests will be Reese Flint, Ty Marshall, Candy Rain. These are the next three authors coming to the platform of Let's Talk Urban. And don't forget, this weekend will be the beginning of our first show for Treasure Blue, The Blueprint, on the 21st. He will be interviewing Strawberry Publications, Lucretia Malone, and her two authors, Maurice Bishop and Pamela Wright. Again, thank you guys for coming to the platform. I love this world of urban writing. I love this world of Let's Talk Urban.
You're tuned in to Let's Talk Urban with host Felicia Bradshaw
at Urban Grapevine Magazine Project,
your number one source for the hottest author in urban fiction talk. Get put on. Yes. Book it at let's.talk.urban1@gmail.com. Boom.
Double your money and make it stack. I'm on to the next one. On to the next one.